G'day team, welcome to the U Project. My name's Craig Anthony Harper. I'm the host of this little extravaganza, this little online internet cyberspace extravaganza. This is a daily affair these days. Melissa, how do we do it 7 days a week?
Good question, but you do it 7 days a week. Tiff and I get to alternate, but you do it 7 days a week.
That's it. That's it. I do. I just show up. You don't want to over-prepare, I think, because if you prepare too much, Melissa, it just fucks up with the kind of the organic nature,
the feng shui,
the vibe, the flow. What?
The feng shui of the podcast?
The feng shui. Isn't feng shui about where your fucking couch is or something?
Yeah, but it's the energy, the energy flow of a room, I think.
Is it? It's vibe.
Of the podcast.
Pretty sure it's not, but okay. It's the feng shui of the conversation.
I'm just making it up as I go along.
I tell you who's all over all things energy is Josh Lenardowitz. Hello, great man. How are you?
Thank you, mate. I love that intro. Appreciate it. I'm doing good. I'm actually doing pretty good lately.
Well,
how are you?
I'm good.
Battling through, nearly released tomorrow night.
I know. You know.
Tonight, is it? Tonight?
I'm excited about... So as we record this, everyone, it's the 21st of October in Melbourne. And do either of you know what's the ETA on gyms opening?
No, I think it's another 1 or 2 weeks possibly, but I don't even believe that would happen.
I think
they hate the fitness industry here.
I think it was going to be the 5th, but I'm not sure if things are being moved forwards because we're reaching targets earlier. I'm not really sure.
I got a feeling it might be the first week in November, but as Josh says, who the fuck knows? It could be my 73rd birthday when that shit opens up again, so I won't be fucking holding my breath. I feel like I'm swearing too much early into the show. I apologize, Mum. I'll cut back. So it's been an interesting year or two for you, big fella.
Yes, to put it mildly.
Yeah. So for those who've been living under a rock, you will know a bit of this because you will have seen the picture that we probably will use in the promo and read some of the if not all of the overview of the show. So Josh,
I'm guessing I look like a condom full of walnuts. Is that
a condom full of walnuts?
Yes, and that's one of the photos you'll use.
It's so funny. I like pictures of you and all elite bodybuilders. It's so interesting. The reactions are everything from "fuck, he's amazing" to "that's disgusting,"
yeah,
and everything along the scale in between. But each to his own. So, you know, one of Australia's, arguably Australia's best ever bodybuilder, multiple pro show winner. If you don't know what that means, that's a big deal. Top 10 finisher in the Mr. Olympia 2 times, mate?
Yes.
A couple of times, which also is a very big deal. Biggest bodybuilding show on the planet, best athletes in the world, all that kind of stuff. Beautiful wife, beautiful little boy, and kind of before we get into what happened recently, how I know we've had this conversation, but quick recap. How old were you when you started bodybuilding?
14.
14.
He said when I was old enough to work, I could go and lift weights.
That was who said that, your dad?
My dad, yes.
All right.
And then it was a don't waste your time doing that stuff. That's not going to get you anywhere. And then when he saw the success I was having from it, he was, you know, he really was proud, which was amazing for me.
Yeah, that was good. Do you have, I mean, of all the stuff that you've, of all of your comps, which is the one that stands out, whether or not you won it or not, but the one that you remember the most fondly or was the best achievement for you? Is there one that you can single out or not really?
The very first one, because it was a show, I've mentioned this before, but it's a show that I started, it was the very first time, and I was, you know, you've got this doubt about yourself and this is the waste of my time and energy and potential. And I did it. And at the same time, my dad was had kidney cancer. So he had his kidney removed and he wasn't there for the show as expected. And after the show, instead of winning my category, I won the category, which is the overall. So I received 2 accolades, 2 trophies. And I was able to bring that into the hospital to my dad, big smiling face after he's had his surgery. And that was a really memorable, symbolic a moment for me.
What year was that, champ?
That was 2004.
Fucking hell, son. You must have been, what are you, like 7 years old? Did you get permission to leave grade 2?
Yeah, exactly.
How old are you now?
38. I know. It's just flying, isn't it?
All right, so... As much or as, and we said this off air, but as much or as little detail as possible, or as you are comfortable with, I should say, Tell us what happened. How long ago was it that all the medical stuff happened?
Yeah, it was 2019. I can give a short story or a long story, whichever way you want to have it.
Let's give a long one.
An intro when you're watching on Netflix, just to see if you're interested in.
Yeah, just like a little synopsis.
I'll give a little quick one.
Give us a trailer, and then we'll see if we press play.
Australia's best bodybuilder heading to the Mr. Olympia, just won his show, baby on the way, boom, tumor in the brain, and I'm off, I'm out, and I wake up from a coma in a week, just arrived for the baby to be born, chronic pain, try to get back into competing, don't do well. And then it's been an up and down roller coaster ever since. And now I'm kind of on the up.
All right. That's it.
You want to watch it?
Yeah. No, I want to watch it. No, let's sounds good so far. It. Melissa, what do you think? Do we press play?
I definitely want to watch it. Yeah. Press play.
Can I just say, have you ever done that before? Because that was pretty funny.
No, I haven't.
That was.
I'm somewhat of a comedian to some people.
So you had a brain tumor, you had a baby on the way, you just won a show.
Yeah.
All right. So tell us about. How did what happened when you got the tumor? What was going on? Did you have headaches? What was happening?
I had headaches, which I never get headaches. And I thought something was really strange. And I was getting ready for the Mr. Olympia. And I just went to the doctor and said, hey, I'm getting these headaches. And there's a little lump on the side of, my temple. And he just said, oh, look, take some aspirin and see a dermatologist and kind of brush me off. And then I went back home and couldn't sleep because of the headaches. And my wife was really, adamant, go back and get a scan. I did. Thankfully, I said, look, I want a scan. And he's kind of ruling it off and said, look, if you want to get a scan, because competing and being 130, 40 kilos most of the year round is taxing on the body. So I'm always a bit of a hypochondriac about my health. And I'm probably, busting his balls, always getting tests done and making sure everything's fine. Yeah, it came back from the scan that I had a tumor in my skull. It was actually my skull. And my middle brother had that at 18. So it was a genetic thing and it just happened to hit me when I was 36. But I was just, shocked. And he kind of brushed it off like, it said to get referred to a neurosurgeon. And he just thought, oh, that's a bit much. And I was like, wow, I'm never seeing this guy again, which I didn't. I had a friend who's a neurosurgeon in WA. Great guy, Quinton. Shout out to you, mate. Jack Neuro, his name is, on Insta. And he fast-tracked me to his friend here in Melbourne. And I went in for the surgery and all things went fine. And then after, it actually protruded from my skull into what's called the dura. You'd know about all this, Craig, studying being a genius right now. and it went into the dura and the brain got very excited. So in recovery, I had a seizure. I had a tonic-clonic seizure and obviously they freaked out. I was getting ready for the Olympian on this nearly 140 kilo Hulk-like figure and I'm just, shaking the house down. So they put me in a coma just for the night. And then the next day they tried to wake me but they didn't use what's called a nasal gastric tube. So all this fluid went into my lungs and then I was coughing up green. They said, and the anaesthetist is really funny when I end up speaking to him later on. He said, you look like the Hulk. You were just this big green shaking guy, making light of the situation, which was funny. But at the time, they freaked out and they were going to, I can't remember what it's called. Is it a trachea? What do they put it through?
Tracheotomy.
Tracheotomy. That's it. They were going to do that. But luckily there was an anaesthetist on board and he come and he found the tube and put me back asleep. And I was asleep for a week. So here's this me getting mentally prepared, training every day, squatting 300 plus kilos in the gym and really fired up and mentally prepared. And then, a week later, after what I believe was the surgery, I believed it was an hour after the surgery, because that's when they said I'd come back to consciousness. And my wife told me it's been, a week and you've been in a coma. And, every time my lungs were that, had all this liquid in there that I had pneumonia and I could have died and all those kind of things. So they kept me in a coma for a week. And then from, like I said, being so driven and focused and lifting all this weight, I couldn't even stand up. And that was mentally a lot to wrap my head around. And it was incredibly traumatic for my wife and my family. And thankfully they were there for me, which I'm really appreciative of, especially now through COVID. You can't have your family, your friends there. So I would have been there, you know, on my own without them coming in to visit me.
Mate, is there a name for thank you for sharing that. That's amazing. I've got a bunch of questions. So you had a tumor on the inside of your skull. Is that right?
Yeah, it was growing in the skull. It's called a esophilic granuloma.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's
So you thought you would wake up an hour after the surgery or you'd come back to consciousness, and you came back to consciousness. You thought it was an hour, but a week of your life had vanished.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a jokester. So before the surgery, I'm, you know, having a laugh, whether that's just my way of dealing with conflict or stress. And I had my wife and I was, you know, it's all good. High five. I'll see you soon. And I had planned she was going to bring my meals in for me the next day. And I was straight back on my diet. And even the neurosurgeon said in the consult before the surgery, this is fine. It's in your skull. It's not, you know, it's not in your brain. He didn't know it was down that far. And he said, you'll be out and you'll be doing cardio. You know, you'll stay in hospital for a night and then you'll be out, you're doing cardio. And then the following week you can get back into some light training. So I'm still mentally thinking, okay, I'm still doing the Olympia because I've got that mindset and I've prepared my whole life to get to this level. And, you know, I'm at the top of kind of starting to get to the pivotal point of my career and maximize my potential. And I kind of got shot down with, you know, with health, which is unfortunate. It happens to a lot of people.
How far out from the 2019 Olympia was that?
I believe it was 11 weeks. So a bit of a setback, but I've kind of got that mindset that even if you're not going to win, like everyone wants to win, but there's not going to be, there's 20 competitors, obviously you can't all win, but I believe you should still go in there and maybe it's an Aussie thing, give it a crack. Maybe you'll inspire someone, maybe, and you won't look like a quitter and you might help someone and gain, you know, inspiration for myself. And for also other people, you know, watching.
So what month was that in 2019, mate, that you had your operation?
It was August.
Okay, so we're two years...
Sorry, July. It was July. Because my son was born in August, so it was towards the end of July.
And so we're 2 years and heading towards 2.5, but 2 years and a few months down the track. So how long were you in hospital? You woke up a week later. How long were you in hospital for all up?
3 weeks. And then I basically got out for a week and then my son was born, which was incredible. It was just so tough, having like severe head pain and, you know, pain medicine is helpful. It's not everything, but especially when you're that close to having your head cut open and losing part of your skull, it's definitely a game changer. And I had an appointment with my doctor that morning, and because I hadn't been able to find a new doctor, I had to have it with the same one that was kind of brushing me off that I had the tumor. And, you know, I was out of pain medication. I had the appointment to get it. And then my wife goes into labor, selfish thing. And so we obviously go to hospital and, you know, I called them up as she's in labor, said, hey, I can't make it obviously, but could you possibly send the script here? And he wouldn't do it. He's just like, no, I need to see it. And I'm like, man, you know, I've had a tumor in my skull. It was just a really bad GP experience from this person. So from there, I've had this chronic head pain, and it was kind of okay. I could push through it. I shouldn't say chronic. It was bad, but I could push through it. I could still train. I try to get my career back on track. There was, you know, a missing part of my skull in my head. So he kind of left it there and hoped that would kind of be okay. And as I would train, it would kind of like suck in, like my head would kind of cave in a little bit. So that was like, okay, this isn't right. And then I booked in for a second surgery and had a plate put in my skull. And then that was kind of where it all went really bad. So we had the other surgery. I wasn't in a coma, luckily, afterwards. Nothing went bad in the surgery, but the pain from that was just enormous. Yeah, it's been kind of a battle from there for the last couple of years. And what happened was I got out. I was still kind of getting ready for competing and stuff because I'm sponsored and endorsed, and you have these obligations you need to fulfill. And plus I'm trying to provide for a newborn and a family. So I try to get back in the gym, which is advice from my neurosurgeon, go back and, you know, you'll be fine. Just do some light stuff. And then the next thing I remember was just I was walking out of the gym. I was first of all trying to, you know, train, and I'm just doing some light stuff. And then the next thing I remember, I'm trying to get into my car and I hear this, oi, and I look up and there's these paramedics there and They said, "You're not driving, you're coming with us." So I thought, "Why?" And they said, "You had a seizure." So I just had this like massive seizure in the gym. And then when they put me in the ambulance, I couldn't remember my name and I was just confused. And so there was a bit of, like you would know about this, your frontal cortex where the surgery was damaged. And, you know, that's obviously a huge part of your behaviors, your memory, all that kind of stuff. So it's been like a real battle to get myself back to what you'd call normal now. But I went through a really, really dark patch of chronic pain and suffering. And yeah, it's I did actually compete. This sounds really odd, but I was really fired up and driven and felt like I had to out of obligation, like I said before. But there was a show in 2020 just before lockdown. And even though I had my head pain, I was just on painkillers and, you know, diazepam and a whole bunch of different medications for my head. But I was just so mentally driven as a competitor, as a champion mindset would have, that I was doing hours of cardio a day and I had all these side effects and I couldn't sleep. And it was, you know, looking now from the outside, looking back in towards it, it's like that was such a stupid idea. But having that issue with my brain, I couldn't think clearly enough to kind of say no. And I was just kind of on autopilot and just pushing through barriers and pain and just trying to get the job done, which ended up not being a good idea to do the show because I didn't do very well. But it was mentally something that I thought, if something would ever go wrong with me again and I'm not around for my son, I wanted him to remember that, hey, my dad wasn't a quitter. He still, you know, went to compete even when he had all these obstacles and things like that. So I had kind of reasons, pros and cons, and there was kind of more pros in my head at the time than cons.
Mm. And looking back now, do you think there's
stupid? I should not have done. I had like my feet with the blisters from doing so much cardio were humongous. I remember going to a doctor and he's like, "You need to get off your feet." I'm like, "No, I have to do 2 hours of cardio every day." So I was like bandaging them up, getting like padding on them. I had this seizure rash because I've had the seizure. So they put me on anticonvulsant drugs and I was having really bad side effects to them. I got this seizure rash all over my physique and that's pretty dangerous to get. So they had to keep changing these things around and I had got asthma and all these different side effects at the time. And of course, like, as you know, with sleep, how important that is for lowering cortisol, and I just wasn't sleeping because of the pain. So it was just looking back, it was like, what was I doing? How was I able to do it? That was one thought that goes to my mind now. But then, yeah, I just wish I had not at this point. But then, of course, if I was at this point, I'd probably think, and I didn't do it, I'd go, "Oh, I wish I had have." You know, it's like, that's life.
You don't know until you do it. You don't know what the experience is going to be. You've got an idea. But when you go through the experience in hindsight, you know, you look back and you go, shoulda, woulda, coulda, shouldn't have, whatever. And were some of the drugs that you were on making you hold water?
Yeah, there was dexamethasone. I was on a high amount of that and it just grew. It just holds a lot of visceral fat and it just grew my waist and my hips.
Yeah,
I had childbearing hips at the time and it was just really hard to get back into. Of course, bodybuilding is a very, it's just a visual competition. So you need everything to be kind of symmetrical left to right, balanced from top to bottom, and in proportion and conditioned and as full as possible as far as, you know, food is concerned without spilling over and creating water retention. So it was just looking back, if I was coaching someone, I'd be like, "You need to stop, you need to stop, you need to stop, or else I'm coaching you," you know, it'd be that kind of a conversation I'd have with myself.
Mm. So when was the, and I know it's been kind of ongoing to an extent, but when was the pain the worst?
It was actually after I'd stopped. So when I focused on the competing, maybe it was because I had something in mind to do. The pain was still enormous and I wasn't sleeping, as I mentioned. And I was over in the US. I did that show there in 2020, just as COVID was hitting. So I did that contest. And even we saw on Facebook that people were like stocking up and hoarding toilet paper. So we had family saying, "You need to bring toilet paper back from the US." So instead of bringing like a pair of Jordans in your luggage, it was like bunches of toilet paper. Would have been really odd to see through customs. Like, what's wrong with these people?
How ridiculous.
I know, it was crazy here, wasn't it? And so we got back. Everything's locked down. I've got nowhere to train, which is my outlet as well, physical and emotionally, and it just gets my head really clear. Mm. And that was taken away from me as well, just like it was for many others. So I had this, it was just all this focus was on pain for me. It wasn't, I didn't have a goal. I wasn't able to work. I wasn't sponsored anymore because that all dropped off. And it was, you know, us as bodybuilders, it's an entertainment point from being at the top of the game. It's a competition, but you're also there to entertain and perform and, you know, grow the sport as well. So if you're not able to do that and travel around the world, it's like, well, you're not really, you can't really promote our brand well if you're not out and about and doing what we want you to do. So, you know, there was the loss of income, the pain, the, you know, placing worst in my career. So there was that on my mindset as well, something I'd worked towards. There was a thought of me never getting back there again. And maybe my career's over. There was me not being able to be a dad or a partner, maybe not being around because I had really, really dark times. Really, silly thinking, you know, like it's you shouldn't have living in chronic pain where you feel like it's not getting better and seeing specialists and asking for help and there not being a way of helping and just more medicine and, you know, that'll kind of, it'll hopefully get better over time was kind of the information I'd receive. And that was the hardest part because it made me feel like, well, I feel hopeless. I feel helpless and I feel hopeless. And that kind of led to a downward spiral where I was, you know, having thoughts of like, well, you know, maybe it's better if I'm not around for people. Maybe I'm a burden on everyone. Maybe it's, if I'm around and I'm such a sad sack all the time or a Debbie Downer or a negative Nancy, what kind of father am I going to be for my kid? And it was a really, really bad, hard time. And it was, I think it was just working towards thinking a bit more clearly every day. I mean, stopping... What would actually happen, I should say, is as the lockdowns were happening here, we couldn't exercise, and exercise always increases your mood and your endorphins, as you know, your dopamine response from training. A friend of mine said, just come around. He lives around the corner. Just come around and have a workout at my place. So I did. And then the next thing I know, the paramedics were there again. And it was like, oh, shit. Like, I've had another seizure. I fell back and hit my head on the corner of this deadlift platform. And it was... you know, he was really worried. So at that point, I looked it up and it said that the Plectil was the medication, one of the strongest, you know, Oxycontin medications that is for pain. I was on a lot of it morning and night. And I thought maybe the size I am, it's just not effective and I need to be taking this much. And that was what was prescribed anyway. And I read that that could cause seizures. So I just went, fuck it. I'm not touching this shit again. I'm just going to bear through it. And I kind of, as hard as it was and as tough as it was to stop something that was a band-aid solution and ripping off that band-aid was incredibly hard, but I needed to do it because I thought, this is my life now. If I'm on this the rest of my life, I'm not part of society. You know, what's the point? And, stopping that and then having little goals every day, you know, to work towards, was very helpful to help get me through it. And then thinking as well, although my family, I might not be very helpful to my family right now at this point, maybe in the future I'll be there to be very helpful towards them and they'll need me then. So although that was the way I kind of battled that mindset of, you know, I'm not helpful, I'm hopeless. But then I thought, well, what if in the future I am helpful and I do give people hope, and especially friends and family and those close. And that kind of what was the driving factor to try and get me out of that bad spiral. The pain's still there. The pain's still there even today. But it's like, I don't know, maybe as a human, you just get to tolerate things a bit more effectively. And that's kind of, I believe maybe that's where I am now. I'm in pain, but I'm able to, it's just part of my life now.
Oh, mate. Wow.
Well, I've been talking for a couple of days.
Mate, I love it. No, what?
I saw you fall asleep a couple of times. No, I'm just kidding. You didn't.
Yeah, no, I actually left the room and had a shave, got myself a cheeseburger. Sorry, I just sat back down. What were you saying? See how us boys do that? We just intersperse the serious stuff with a bit of bullshit just to break. No, but mate, I'm so glad that, one, thank you for sharing because it's a privilege and I know that stuff is uncomfortable and I know we even spoke before we went live and you're like, I don't know if this is anyone's going to want to hear it. Trust me, people want to hear it. And because it's real and it's you and you are, you know, in general terms, you're a very lovable, uplifting, positive human who's just been through the worst shit. And I mean, it might not be, you know, the most positive, but it's real. And so in some ways it really is very positive because you're figuring shit out. And also, as you were talking, you know, it must be so hard when people are kind of saying, we don't really know, but hopefully, Josh, it'll get better. But there's so much shoulder shrugging and we don't know and uncertainty that for you, it's hard to be positive in the middle of that. Because one, my head hurts like a motherfucker and nobody can tell me what's going to happen.
Yeah, I had it really was. It was like getting hit with a hammer constantly. That's how the pain I felt. It wasn't like that all the time, but it was like that a bunch of times during the day. And then it was, other than that, it was just painful. And that would be, I consider myself kind of a tougher kind of guy, but I'd be crying and in pain and in agony. And I thought, why is this happening? Why is there no help? Why is there not a way around this? And it's apart from more medication. And I remember just being locked in a room for like weeks, just, you know, taking pain medication. That was like a routine. And that was a shit routine to have, but it was kind of the most bearable routine at the time. And it would have been incredibly hard with my wife. You know, she had our son. And, you know, I wasn't, even though the kids are always about the mum at that age, I still wasn't able to kind of alleviate some of the pressure because I was too focused on all my own issues at the time. So, it was really tough. It was really tough.
How's the little bloke?
He's amazing. He was kind of, isn't it weird how some things in life just happen at the right time? And I don't know if he would not have been here if I would still be here, if that makes sense. Like it seems really, you know, cliche to say, but it's, definitely gave me a lot of strength during that time.
Yeah. Mm. How old is he now? Like
he's two. He's just he's a little bit older than two, and he's a mate. Now it's like figuring things out and becoming, you know, so much fun to be around. Just wants to play. And I just love him. Love him. It's such a different feeling now on this side, you know, than, because I should have had that feeling when he came into this world, you know, this is my son. I'm amazed. I just couldn't, you know, I just focused on my pain. I mean, we had like 5 days in hospital where I could stay there with my wife. And I was like, nah, as soon as he was born, you know, I held him, loved him, stayed with my wife until the end. And she's like, do you want to stay? I'm like, I can't, my head's just too sore. I need to go. And you know, I would come back each day, obviously, but I didn't, I just felt like this battle I was on was just so severe to get through. It was really tough, but he's great. And I'm thankful to be a part of his life. That's how I need to look at things.
I'm sure he's thankful to be a part of yours, mate. What, moving forward, what, if any, I'm scared to ask this question, but what hope is there, or what information is there, or what prognosis is there around the next 1-5 years for you?
In terms of?
Medically, with your... Yeah. So with your pain, with your injury, with your recovery and healing, is it like we think you'll get better, or is there something more than that?
So I'm on anticonvulsants now for a couple of years. So I don't have a seizure, and I just, not that we could drive anywhere, but I couldn't, wasn't allowed to drive. You lose your license because in case obviously you have a seizure, and you know, getting that license back and being on this medication that kind of works for me is good. So there's that part of it that kind of is positive, to not have another seizure, because that's always kind of on my mind. And it's, I feel really sorry for the people I'd had a seizure around, because it would have been traumatic for them. You know, it's, for me, it's just a blackout, but for them, it would be something really severe. And they could do a nerve block, but it's not 100%. They don't know if that will help or not. And so that's kind of, they would go in the back of my neck and do that. And that's kind of something, after having a couple of bad experiences medically, I'm kind of thinking, well, if I go in and it blocks and it numbs one, you know, quarter of my head, but it doesn't, you know, help. It's just like, well, you know, I've kind of come to the point now where I'm just dealing with it, and I'm training and I'm taping up my head with either a bandage or packing tape or wearing a hat and just keeping it really tight if I'm doing a workout or something. I'm just finding a way around it.
Want to see a photo of you with packing tape on your head. Fucking hell. Can I tape it up?
I'll get a photo to you. It's it's weird, but I just think, hey, I've got to try and find a way if I want to try and get back to normal again. And the fear of having a seizure while, you know, squatting or on a leg press or something where it would crush you is, you know, really mentally a huge mental obstacle I'm getting over. And people would say, why do you train then? Just give it up. It's like, well, that's, for me, there's that saying, what's the point of living if you can't feel alive? And for bodybuilding, for me, that's something that I'd, you know, made me feel alive and I loved. And I don't want that to be taken from me as well as, you know, everything else that's been taken from me so far.
Mm. Do you think that you'll be pain-free one day? Or you
don't
want
to? So. Yeah, I'm more hopeful now for sure.
Right.
But there's things, if I do a hard session, I'll have pain and I'm like, you know, I'll just deal with it. And that's life now.
You should be like me. Just don't train hard. I mean, it's, you know, that seems to work for me. Yeah. How often are you training? I know you've got a really nice setup in the garage. Yeah. How often are you training?
Now it's back to 6 days a week, which is good. And that's been a huge change going from, you know, someone who's always training and to then not having that time off. And then also someone who's eating 6 or 7, you know, cows a day, to then not having an appetite and then eating, you know, just fast food, just being kind of having no enjoyment in life. And then looking at food as the only form of pleasure and joy. That's the part I'm trying to overcome right now. Is I form this really bad habit with fast food. And when I'm in pain, I'll eat or I'll starve. So I either starve and I won't eat for most of the day, and then I'll eat a really bad meal, something to look forward to, which is now, you know, as you know, being a human, it's not just a don't do it and you'll be fine. It's much harder than that. It's breaking habits and behaviors and changing your mindset on, okay, well, what's this doing to me internally? What's this doing to, you know, growing your waist? Like, what's happened to me? It's grown my waist to nearly 50 inches, which is huge for a bodybuilder to have. And now I need to bring that back down if I'm ever, you know, wanting to compete again. But it's not, the body's not everything. That's even you, when I've had conversations with you, even before I'd reached this level of success, it was, you know, you're more than a body. You're an emotional, spiritual, you know, social being, and it's not it. Bodybuilding's not everything, which was luckily I thought that way, because if I thought it was everything, maybe, you know, things would be different for me right now and we wouldn't even be having this conversation, because I would have just been so wrapped up in, there's my life gone.
I can't believe when you're feeling like dog shit, you don't just crave some steamed fish and broccoli, Josh. Fucking hell, I'd just love a kilo of steamed broccoli right now just to set me off. What's your favorite junk food? We're not endorsing junk food, but what's your go-to?
Dirty Bird KFC. It's not ideal. It's just secret herbs and spices.
Dirty Bird.
Yeah, it's not good.
You could just smash a bucket of that, couldn't you?
Yeah, you can go to town on that thing. so that's I need to get myself back on track. That's another obstacle. But
what's your strength in terms of when you're at your optimal, say, whatever, you know, when you're at your peak, you're 10 out of 10, what number on the 1 to 10 scale are you now? I'm talking about just strength right now.
Probably about 7, I think. I'm back, my strength's getting back up there. I've got some goals to accomplish in the next coming weeks and I'm trying to be more diligent with my food choices. And then when I have the pain, it really sets me back. Like, that's the limiting factor.
Is there a rhyme or reason? Like, do you kind of go, fuck, when I do this, that, like, is it on any way, on any level, I should say, somewhat predictable? Or is there anything that indicates what might come?
Yeah, sleep. If my sleep's been poor, if I'm stressed a lot, like if I'm working too much, that's a factor. And then just sometimes I just wake up and there's no, like, I was trying to keep in my notes, why have I got this pain and what's happening and what am I doing the day before or the day of? And then sometimes it'd just be for no damn reason. I'd wake up and I felt like I hadn't slept and my head would just be, you know, be there, just be painful. I just think you taught me really well as well, perhaps just to pump up your tires for a moment. You know, if you're in pain, you might as well do something productive with it as well. Instead of, if you're going to be in pain anyway, you might as well work towards something that's, even though there's pain associated to that as well, you might as well make the pain work for you towards the end and be profitable, as opposed to just, you know, letting it take over your life and being a victim.
You've always been a deep and philosophical lad. I love that about you. When did we first meet? Was it maybe 8 years ago or something?
Yeah, I'm not too sure. I think you said I saw this. We actually met a long time ago when you said I look like a fridge with a head at a seminar, and I thought, what a top bloke. He's got a good sense of humor. And the crab, you know, obviously you train with. I competed at this pro show, I think it was, and he said, "This, check out this guy from Australia." That's what you told me. And I'd seen you on, it was something on the TV. You did like a morning show and it was a highlight on Facebook or something. And I just said, Hey, Harps, you're a very handsome looking bloke. Would you mind making me handsome as well and look after me and help me with my mindset? And you said, yeah, absolutely. And the rest is history. Now we're in a bromance.
There we are. We are definitely. That was a while ago, wasn't it? So how do you make a few bucks these days? What's going on? Fill at Big W, or what are you doing?
Yes. You know what I had when I used to stack shelves at IJ, it was one of the best jobs I had because the team just made me laugh all day long and it was so easy to go there. I've done a lot of jobs packing potatoes and onions, and you just got to work your way through life, don't you? And I felt like from where I was before COVID kind of hit and before all this stuff happened, you know, I was kind of on my way to achieving these goals I had. And now I feel like I've gone back a step and I'm, you know, handing dumbbells to people and coaching people online, which is great. And it's excellent if you're doing it. I just felt like I was kind of past that and going for something more. So I feel like I've stepped back, which I love to help people. That's great. That's what I'm focusing on when I'm coaching people. But, you know, I'd like to do, you know, something else once my head clears up. But that's a matter of how many hours, you know, like it's so hard to put all your hours in something productive, but still have time for your happiness. And now with my son and making sure he doesn't hate me when he's older, so I want to make sure I'm investing in him and helping him grow and become a great human, as opposed to just not getting to spend any time with him.
I'm sure that little dude's going to love the shit out of you. Okay. So are you working with people who want to get on stage, or you're working with the general, when you say you're coaching, you're helping people get in shape, is it competitors, wannabe competitors, or the general public? Or
It's mostly competitors. Yeah.
Right. Awesome. And so how does it
still do some gen pop people, which is I love. Like I have no judgment towards what a person's goal is. It's more of what I love is when they want to get from point A to point B, and I'm a part of that. That's what I love. And some people don't want to get to the stage, and that's awesome. And some people do, and they know that they're not going to have a chance of winning. And I think that's great. I don't need people to, you know, some coaches out there in bodybuilding will pick people that they can coach who are going to make their name more successful. I don't need that because I've already accomplished a lot in this industry. So I'm happy to get someone to the stage in the shape of their life. And even if they place last, they're still, you know, going to be happy.
Yeah. Over the years, I worked with a few people who were not at all athletically gifted, like I'm not. But, you know, train them up for an event wasn't, you know, could have been a 10K run, could have been a triathlon or, and every now and then I bump into someone that I used to work with and they'll talk about a thing that they did 20 years ago, which was literally one of the highlights of their life. You know, I trained a lady who was just, in fact, I trained her for a long time. Her name's Pauline. When I met her, she literally used to eat cake for breakfast and couldn't run 20 feet. Anyway, I trained her for a very long time. And among other things, she ended up in her mid-50s deadlifting 100 Ks for 8 reps.
Wow.
Like for real. And ran 3 half marathons with me. And, whenever I bump into her, she's like, they were the best days of my life, the best days of her life, because she was just doing things that nobody encouraged her to do, that nobody thought she could do, that she never thought she could do. And I mean, she was already middle-aged when she started training, God bless. And I just think that our thinking and our self-doubts and our self-sabotage and our fear and our anxiety and our imposter syndrome and all those bullshit things that fucking invade our mind, understandable though, but they get in the way of our potential, you know? And it's like, if you and I and any coach or trainer listening, if we can help people just open that door on their potential, then I think we're doing our job really well.
Definitely. It's an interesting one though, with accomplishing a goal, how people stay then driven, like once they've achieved that. And as you've seen, I'm sure amongst everyone, a lot of people, once they do achieve something, then everything falls apart, you know, and even me included, my goals were always competing, and now that may not be there anymore. And then the wheels, I've had a lot of things happen to me, obviously, but the wheels have kind of fallen off with the food. And that was kind of keeping me diligent towards it. So that's going to be, I think, something to refocus on, a new goal, and get back to normal again. But what advice do you have? I'm going to be a bit of a, take up your time as a coaching
client.
Get back on, you know, and yeah.
Here's the thing though, right? So everyone listening to this, is this is what I always say, that, you know, this podcast is just, it's thoughts and ideas and words and stories and experiences and insight and hopefully a bit of wisdom and education. But at the end of the day, for the person listening, it's just a bunch of theory.
Yeah.
Right? I can't tell you anything that you don't already know about training. I can't tell you anything new about nutrition.
Because it might not just be me. I've got a funny story. Someone I used to coach, it was for a year and in person to person, and he lost over 60 kilos in a year, but his goal was to get a route. He never had seen anything before, right? So that was his goal. That was his main goal. And then once he achieved that goal, I remember him calling me up, you know, after it. And I was like, this is a bit odd. And he's kind of like, hey, I did it. And I'm like, okay, good on you, man. Yeah. Okay. I'll talk to you next training session. And that's it. The wheels fell off, and that was it, because the goal was no longer there anymore. And then he gained weight again. And, you know, there's, you know, that's what you were just saying. It's about
ideas
and thoughts. And I just, sorry to interrupt, that just came to my mind.
No, it's good. I love that story. Really, and what a fucking funny story. And not the worst goal in the world if you've never had a route. And well done, young man. But I think also that the good and bad of having goals is that if the totality of our focus is the goal itself, and there's nothing else, like the creation of new hardwired habits and behaviors. And like for somebody like you, who was and might be again a professional athlete, it's different because you've got to peak for an event and all of that. But for the general pop, I think we need, it's good to have goals. It's good to go, I'm going to do a triathlon, run a race, get on stage and do an amateur comp or whatever. But all of those people also, if you said to them, do you want to create temporary change or forever results? Everyone's going to say option B. And so part of it is, you know, being able to realize that this needs to be a reprogramming of our mind, so that, because the staying focused and staying diligent and staying disciplined and staying motivated is fucking impossible. But when a certain behavior is driven by a non-negotiable hardwired habit in the subconscious, now this is just you on autopilot. This is you being normal. So when people say to me, how do you, you know, in the middle of COVID and this and that, and how do you not eat shit, or how do you keep training, or, and not that I'm the high watermark for anything, how do you stay focused and motivated? The answer is, I don't stay motivated and focused regarding that, because I don't have to. Because it's literally, it would be harder for me to stop training than to keep training. It would be harder for me to eat shit than not eat shit, because that's my normal. And so the challenge is, I think, around this is to go, what do I want the next 1-5 years/decades to look like? And I know this is very workshoppy, but based on that, what for me needs to be non-negotiable. And I know, and this is why I say to people, don't do what I do. Like, so for me, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do drugs. I've never been drunk, never been high. I don't eat cake. I don't eat sugar. I don't eat all these things. Do I think other people should be like me? No. But what I've done is I know that if I open the junk food door, I'm fucked because I'm like an addict around junk food. So you wouldn't say to an alcoholic, mate, just have one beer. Don't be an idiot. It's my birthday. Have one beer. Nobody's saying that to an alcoholic. And people don't understand how powerful food is in good and bad ways for people who have food issues. And without being melodramatic, I definitely have food issues, body dysmorphia, eating issues, all those things, and I've spoken about it many times. And so for me, it needs to be black and white. So I know, like, for example, I don't eat lunch anymore. And the reason that I don't eat lunch is because for me, my brain function is better through the day. My mental, emotional, and physical energy is better through the day. But I would love to eat lunch. But when I eat lunch, my body goes, get fucked, go and have a sleep. So if it was only about what gives me joy or pleasure, it doesn't work for me. Like the 10 or 15 minutes of eating the fucking chicken wrap with a bit of mayo and a bit of fucking awesome, but 14 seconds after I finish it, I wish I hadn't done it. So I think that, you know, for you moving forward, there's like, you are very good at dealing with adversity, clearly. But there's another part, and that is you getting really clear on what do I need to make non-negotiable. Maybe it's about food, maybe it's something else, but, and this sounds cliche, I get it. But when you step out of the cliche and you step into the behavior, the implementation, it actually works. And the reason that, and I'm not talking about you, but the reason that so many people are resistant to certain advice is because the advice is fucking hard. And we don't like hard. You know, it's like, I'm 58. For me to stay lean, strong, functional, it's, you know, there's some work. There's some, for the most part, it's not too hard because I'm pretty hardwired. But it's not that I never feel like cheesecake. It's not that I never feel like fucking eating my own body weight in potato cake sandwiches. It's not that never, you know, but it's just that I have figured out, and I think this is true for everyone, you know, mentally, emotionally, socially, physiologically, what works for your body and your personality and your spirit and your emotional system. And, you know, I think you're on a journey of discovery, and for you, it's, you need to spend time with people. This is going to sound egotistical. I don't mean it to, but you need to spend time with people like me who love you and want you to be great, who don't want anything back, and who'll just support and encourage you. Because when you are healthy and well, you do that for others. But right now, your days are trying to invest in others, but also just deal with your own significant shit, which is not insignificant. So the fact that you do as well as you do, honestly, I'm not pissing in your pocket. It's fucking amazing. Like, I don't know if I don't think I'm as resilient as you. And I think I'm quite resilient, but I actually don't think I'm that resilient. I don't think I'm that tough, you know, and maybe it's because of the little fella and Lizzie and, you know, but you're here, mate. You didn't take the left turn. You're here and you're doing it. And, you know, I just think it's, you know, it's a credit to you, but it's still, it's every day and it's, you know, it's, and now I feel like I'm on the soapbox, but it's, you know, being able to fully commit to something, which you've done, and you've done it with everything else, but now with food, it's just that next thing. And also because you understand how, I mean, you're an interesting cat because you're way more educated than people might think, because people look, it's like, you know, people sometimes will look at big bodybuilders and go, he's a big buffhead, but you understand the endocrine system, the nervous system, muscular system. You understand nutrition. You understand adaptation. You understand better than most exercise physiologists do especially from a being in shape point of view. But also what is on top of that, you have a level of instinct and intuition about all this that most people don't. Like, you innately and intuitively understand shit because you and I have had many conversations. So I think you've got to trust the instinct, but also, if I'm coaching you, not give yourself a get out of jail card. You know?
Thanks, mate. That actually made a big man cry. Thank you.
No, but you do. Like, and I'm not trying to make you feel good. Like, that is genuinely, like, I don't lie about this stuff. Like, that's what I think of you. I think you are gifted and I think you are a gift. And the problem is that we don't feel like a gift. You know, like I wrote something that's been plagiarized 1,000 times and I put it, somebody actually took it and left my name on it. And I put it up the other day, which was nice, which essentially that, you know, some people just help and serve and people and want them to succeed and they don't have an agenda. And I feel like I try to be that person. I don't nail it. I try to be that person. I sometimes I'm that, sometimes I'm not, but I feel like you're that for others. Like, you have a very gentle, kind way about you. And I've never seen you be a prick. And I've seen a lot of people be a prick. And you're, you know, and so I think that you're meant to be here. And I think you're going to be here for a long time. And I feel like you're going to get through this. I feel like I'm prophesying now, Brother Josh.
Thank you.
You know, so, you know, we'll be cheering you on, mate. But anything that I can do and Melissa can do and, you know that we're always here for you. And, you know, I think too, also dudes, sometimes, you know, we feel like if we talk, we're a burden. You know, you're not a burden because you're not a fucking, you're not a whingy, whiny person. So I know when you talk about stuff that's tough, it's real, you know, because you don't do it much,
yeah.
You know?
Thanks, mate. It is, it's, I just, you feel, I'm sure, I just feel like a burden to people when I'm talking about, you know, what's the hard things that I'm going through. And yeah, like I feel like I'm an incredibly flawed human, and I know other people out there feel the same way at times. And sometimes, yeah, you follow your emotions and you shouldn't, or sometimes you follow your commitment and you should, or you shouldn't. And it's trying to figure out this stuff called life. And that was what going through that traumatic experience, it was like, I was asking so many questions. What's the point of life? You know, why are we here again? You know, you ask them constantly, and why are we floating around on this big rock around the sun? And no one knows for a fact 100% why we're here. And then are these differences we make in each other's lives going to matter, like, in 500 years time? Like, is it going to make a difference? Or, you know, will we be extinct like the dinosaurs and it's all not important? Or is there a greater purpose? And is there, you know, a reason that we need to find salvation if you're spiritual? And that's kind of where the hard part is for someone like I was going through those, that thought process of, why do I not want to wake up tomorrow morning? That's been the interesting, hard, challenging mental task that I've had to kind of overcome a little bit, but I'm always on that quest, I think.
I think also, you know, you go, I'm incredibly flawed. I'm going to go, yep, you are. And?
Yeah.
And? What are you going to do? Because I'm incredibly
hard.
Like, welcome to the human experience. Yeah. You're a fuckwit sometimes. Yep. You're flawed. You know, okay, me too. It's like, and this is the thing. Like, we, you know, I don't know anyone who's flawless. Yeah. I don't know anyone who has zero dysfunction. I've never met that person. I don't know anyone who's.
And don't think they are.
Pardon?
I've met people who are ignorant and don't think they are.
100%.
Especially in my world of bodybuilding. It's having a conversation with someone and saying, well, you're kind, or you're nice, or you're not boastful, which that's a big compliment to me. You're not, you know, you don't think you're above anyone, because I don't. It's like, we're all human. I've just accomplished a lot in bodybuilding, and it's not that makes me a better person. So that's, you know, I feel like that's something that if you realize that you are flawed, you're not overly cocky all the time, because, you know, life can really hit you hard. And then what do you have left? If everything of your life is in one area and that's all you define yourself as and it's taken from you, then what are you?
100%. And I think further to that, I don't think I'm not better than anyone. I know I'm not. I know you're not better than anyone. Like, it's not a fucking competition. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we feel like we can rate each other, this person's better, that, like, based on what? What's your measure? What's your KPI? It's like, it's just such a redundant use of energy to compare somebody's worth or value. And, you know, that it's okay. Like, there's a difference between acknowledging sometimes I'm a dumbass. I do dumb things. Sometimes I do great things. Sometimes I'm wise and insightful, and sometimes I'm inappropriate, you know. But all of the time, I'm a human. All of the time, and all of the time, you know, you're a human. And I think back to the, you know, when we go, what's the point? I say to people, what do you want the point to be? Because the point is whatever the fuck you want it to be. Like, you're going to be here for another 40, 50 years, you personally, hopefully. What do you want to do? Like, it, you know, like, it's optional. The meaning of life, like, we have this, we grow up in this, I think, ridiculous paradigm of thought that there is everyone, there's some pre-designated meaning of life that is under some spiritual rock that I need to discover. And then I need to, once I discover that hard to find a purpose under the spiritual rock, I then need to execute it. I'm like, well, here's another idea. One, maybe you don't have a meaning of life. Maybe you have multiple meanings. Maybe over the course of, like, what the meaning of your life is in your 20s shifts when you're in your 30s and 40s. And maybe it doesn't have to be a single thing. Maybe it can be multiple things. And maybe you don't need to have, maybe you do, but maybe you don't need some divine inspiration. Maybe if there is a divine, maybe the divine has given you the ability to think and choose your values and behaviors and choose your purpose and choose your path, right? Rather than having to comply with some invisible whatever that tells us what to do or not to do, because that abdicates me of any personal responsibility or sovereignty, because it's all preordained. I have no control. Well, how fucking convenient. How about this? How about, you know, Craig or Josh or Melissa or whoever, how about you decide what the fuck you're going to do with what you've been given? 24 hours a day, 168 hours a week. You've got a body, you've got a brain, you've got skill, you've got talent, you've got people who love you, you've got resources, you're not living in abject poverty. Okay, with all of that in mind, now tell me what you are going to do. And if you choose to do dumb shit, cool, that's on you. If you choose to do smart shit, also on you. Well done. But don't waste your time and talent and energy and potential and then complain about where you're not at, right?
Yeah.
And there's stuff that's out of, like, what's – so the stuff that you went through, that was out of your control. So there's no one's going, oh, Josh, fucking jog it out. We're going, mate, that's fucking terrible. But now we go, you went through all this shit. It's terrible.
What am I going to do with it now?
What are you going to do? How are you going to respond? Yeah. Like, what are you going to do when you get off this call? Yeah. What are you going to eat tonight? What are you going to eat tomorrow? Oh, yeah, but I, no, bullshit. Like, that's true for all of us. And is it easy? No. Is it comfortable? No. Do we like these messages? No. Am I speaking the truth? That's for listeners to decide. But my intention is always, as much as we can with what we know, let's be present and let's be real. What is real? What is truth? And what is just a story, and what is, for me, actually possible, you know? And the stuff that you need to do moving forward, mate, nobody's pretending, the fucking next year for you is going to be a fucking hoot. It won't be. We could pretend it's going to be amazing. Pretty sure it's not. Pretty sure there are going to be peaks and troughs. Pretty sure there's more pain in store. I hope there's less and less and less. But let's be real. Based on the last 2 years, there's a pattern, you know. But in the middle of all of that, you've still got to navigate life.
Yeah, that's true, mate.
Steps down off soapbox. Hey, mate, I feel like I've ear bashed you. Do you want to?
Lovely. Thank you, mate. Love you.
I love you too, man. Do you want to... Is there anything you want to share before we find out where we can find you and connect with you and all that?
I just want to say, if anyone's still listening, thank you for listening to my story as well and being here. And I just want to say, anyone who's really struggling, you know, stay around, please be there, like work through it. There's what you're feeling now, the opposite of that is also possible. That's what I want to say to them. And there's going to be people in your future that really need you. So be here, be there, get through what you're going through, be tough. And that sounds silly saying be tough, but it is. You've been tough. People have gone through things in their life, and so have I. And you have to just keep swinging. That's life.
Amazing. Such good advice. And you're a good man. Now, if people want to follow you and all that kind of stuff, find you, follow you. I know you don't have much free time these days, but people want to, where can they follow you, mate?
I've got my social account, which is my name, Josh Lenartowicz, the huge last name. Just write Lenart and it should pop up. I've got my website, joshlenartowicz.com.au as well. I've been very distant from social media since I've been going through all this, which I should have been more probably open and honest about it. I just really needed to work on myself. So I've lost, you know, some followers and things like that, which is like not life. You know, this is real. Us talking to each other is real. Social media is great, but it's also, you know, not real life, as you know.
Mm. Oh, mate, we love you. Melissa, do you love the big fella?
Of course I do. Thank you so much, Josh, for taking time to speak to us. We really do appreciate it. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks,
Adam. Thanks, mate. Stay there, buddy. All right, everyone. Send the big fella a bit of love. He may or may not look at it, but fuck it. Send him some. Love your guts. See you next time.
Thank you. I get stressed if I want to help everyone. And when I don't have enough time in the day, I feel stressed.
He won't respond, but he'll read it.
I will. I'm back on the horse again. Time to get back to it.
All right. See you guys.